morning. Hope you're having a great weekend. Are you? It's good because tomorrow morning we have to hit it again. It's the weekly grind. I mean, we're back into it. We're working again. And you know what? Work's a big deal to us. It really is. It's a big deal to us. And when you think about it, that a study done in 2003 revealed that Americans work more than any other industrial nation on the planet. Hey, we're all about work. Now, when I use the word work or work life, I'm not just talking about those people who go to an office. I'm talking about everybody that works, which would include students studying in college or high school, junior high, elementary. That's your work. That's your job. I'm talking about stay-at-home parents, people that put time into raising kids and they do it from their home, and or people that are managing their household and their schedule and their finances. When we talk about work, we're talking about work in every arena of life. Whatever you're giving yourself to, whatever your industry is, your work life. And that's a big deal to us. You know what? From the earliest times, what's the first question you ask a kid that you meet? What are you going to be when you grow up, right? Are you going to be an astronaut? Are you going to be the president of the United States? Are you going to be a firefighter? Are you going to be a nuclear physicist? And then in high school, what do we ask the kids? We say, what's your favorite subject? Oh, you like math. Oh, you'll make a great engineer then, or you'll make a great programmer. And then in college, what are we saying? What's your major? In other words, what are you getting a degree in so that you can get a job and get off mom and dad's nickel? Quickly. And then when we meet an adult, what's the second question we ask? Right after what's your name? It's, what do you do? And when we ask the question, what do you do, in our world, because work is such a big deal to us, that identifies a whole bunch of information about that person, information that's important to us, because work is a big deal to us. Do you know the average American now spends 100 hours a year commuting to and from work? 100 hours. That's your two-week vacation right now. As much time as you spend with your foot in the sand, you're spending with your foot on the gas pedal, just getting to and from this place called work. Only a lot of you now are just getting up and making your own Starbucks, because talking to some folks this week, found out that the IBM workforce stateside, one-third of those employed by IBM actually do not have an office to go to. They work out of their home, their car, or the local Starbucks. That's what they do. It's a big deal. This work world is a big deal that we're all involved in. And the question this morning is not, is it a big deal to us? Because it is a huge deal to us. The question is it a big deal to God? Does God care at all about our work? Is God interested more than what we do on Sunday morning, or what we do in our Bible studies, or what we do in our prayer time, or our family? Does God have an interest in what we do? We're interested in taking care of business, but is God interested in that? In order to answer that question, we've got to go all the way back to the beginning of the Bible, so I would encourage you to open your Bible, turn to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1 in your Bible. As you turn there, I want us to discover the origin of work. Where did work originate in the first place? If you go back to Genesis chapter 1, you find in the first verse of the Bible, what does it say? It says, in the beginning, God what? God created the heavens and the earth. What we see around us, what we know, that was God working. That was God working. If you don't think that that's a big deal for God to create the heavens and the earth, then you try it. I mean, I had a project in my backyard moving some rocks this year, and that just about killed me. I can't imagine creating the Rocky Mountains. In fact, the psalmist says it this way in Psalm 19:1. He says, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies demonstrate or display the work of God's hands." In other words, creation is God's work. So I was thinking about that this week, and I asked our church plant residents to take some time to just think about all of the skills, all of the professions, all of the jobs involved in creation. And just think that through. That would be a fun thing for you to do in your quiet time as you ponder God. A fun thing to do as a family, as you talk about it as a family, is just sit down and try to think of all the skills, the professions, or the occupations that God had in creation. I mean, some obvious ones are things like architect, like engineer, plumber, builder. You also have other ones. As he created plants, botanist. As he created animals, zoologist. As he created marine life, marine biologist. You know, a lot of the jobs that we do today are really, they have their origin in God himself, who was the creator. God also took Adam and Eve and he began to instruct them. Teacher. And what I'm suggesting is that God himself is a worker. And when we were created in the image of God, God created us as workers. And as we look at our professions and our professional life, we can see parallels between what God did and what God does and how he created us and what we do. So that's our first principle this morning. God is a worker, and he created us as workers also. In fact, if you'll turn over to Genesis chapter 2, with the creation of humanity, the creation of man and woman, notice what it says in verse 15. Look down to verse 15. It says, "The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden." Now notice the next few words. It's not to eat the fruit. It's not to hang out by the lagoon. He put him in the Garden of Eden to do what? To work it and take care of it. You mean before the fall of man, there was work? Yep. Adam is placed in this beautiful garden and is the representative of the God who just made it all, who just created it, who just did the work to make it. Now Adam's responsible to be involved in that work, to take care of it, to keep it up, to protect it, to prune it, to work with it. You know, it's very interesting, though, as you look carefully at the passage. The words work and cultivate, or work and care for, are the two big Hebrew words for worship and keep God's commandments. In other words, in the very nature of the creation, God the worker creates us to be workers, places us in his world, and he tells us that when we work, when we do what God's created us to do, when we use the gifts and abilities and skills to do things that are industrious, that make a difference, that make things beautiful, when we do that, we're actually doing that as an act of worship and obedience. We worship and we obey God in the Monday through Friday day-to-day activities of our very work life. What was my question? Does God care about your work? Absolutely. God cares intimately about your work. God created you as a worker, and God blesses you in the course of working. Now, there is a little bit of an edge to work, and we see that in chapter 3. In chapter 3, after sin, this is our second principle, or because of sin, God gave work an edge. God gave work an edge. So after Adam and Eve sins, God changes the world. He changes the composure of the world. He creates futility in the world. And in chapter 3, starting in verse 17, he writes, or says to Adam, he said, "Because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree which I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil you will eat of it. All the days of your life it will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return." Because of sin, there is an edge There's a harshness to work. There's a futility. There's a struggle. That's where we get the concept that work is a four-letter word. It's hard. Because of that, oftentimes, people see work not as a blessing or a gift from God. They see work as a toil, as a struggle, as a difficulty, as a grind, as something that's hard. And our view is that if we can escape from work to leisure, if we can escape to work to fun, to those kind of activities, then we're really blessed and we're really enjoying ourselves. But the thought is that God created us as workers. That took place before the fall. Even though it does have an edge, it's hard, it still has value to God. In fact, Christ came to redeem us from the effects of the curse, not only in our soul, but also in our activity. And in our activity, God wants to change our concept of work from something that is a drudgery to something that can be offered to Him as a blessing or as an act of worship. In fact, I want to take you to the New Testament now and show you God's plan for our work. Turn to Colossians chapter 3. In Colossians chapter 3, we see the plan for our work that's given to us by God. And Colossians chapter 3 is a passage that everybody really needs to memorize. This is a passage I would challenge you to commit to memory, because this passage gives you the Christian perspective. As a Christ follower, this is what work ought to look like to you. Let's look at it together. Starting in verse 23, he says, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving." Now, isn't that an unbelievable passage of Scripture? Because in those two verses, he lays out a Christian understanding of work. He talks about our motivation, he talks about our boss, and he talks about our paycheck. Let's start with motivation, or our effort. He says in verse 23, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart." Work at it with all your heart. What kind of effort am I supposed to bring to the job? What I'm supposed to bring to the job, I'm supposed to bring my best effort. I'm supposed to bring my best effort. Whatever I'm doing, whatever kind of work I'm in, I'm supposed to bring my best to the table when I come. That phrase, "work at it with all your heart," means that you have an intense focus in your work. You have an intense focus. You're paying attention to what you're doing. It also means that you're energized by it. You're bringing energy to it. It's not something that you're passive in. And finally, it implies passion. It implies passion. In other words, you care about the product of your day. It makes a difference to you how the customer is served. It matters to you whether the design is a good design, whether the creativity is good, whether the music is played with finesse on key, whether your studies are done to the best of your ability. It matters to you to bring your passion, your focus, your intensity to the job. You're not just working to get through the day. You're working to bring your best to each and every project that you're assigned to do. You work at it with all your heart. Now you say, "Well, if you knew my company and you knew my boss and you knew the customers and so forth, you'd pretty much understand that I don't really have a whole lot of motivation to do that." Well, God knows that, and so he keeps talking and tells us who our real boss is here. He tells us, verse 23, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for" who? "Working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving." Who's my boss? My boss is none other than Jesus. That's who I work for. I work for Jesus. In fact, he says it three times in the passage. He says, "You work for the Lord, you work for the Lord, you work for the Lord Christ." Just in case your boss so looms in your mind that you can't get his or her face out of your head, that's not who you work for as a believer. At the end of the day,
your work is done for your Lord, Jesus Christ himself. And believe me, I know that there are a lot of bad bosses out there. I read recently the story of the boss who had to give a speech at a convention coming up, and so he called Poindexter in. He said, "Poindexter, I've got to give this speech, and I know you're a good writer, so would you write me a speech?" And so Poindexter wrote him a speech, and he got up and delivered the speech. It was supposed to be a 20-minute speech, and he got up and he delivered the speech, and he came back the next day, and he was just furious, and he said to Poindexter, "I can't believe it. I told you to write me a 20-minute speech, and you wrote me an hour-long speech." In fact, after the first 25 minutes, people got up and they started to leave, and they kept leaving through the whole thing, and I was just so frustrated. By the time I finished with that hour-long speech, everybody was gone. And Poindexter said, "Sir, I don't know what happened." He said, "You know, I wrote you a 20-minute speech. I typed it up, and I provided two extra copies of it for you." I thought that was funny. Some of you are going to figure that out in a few minutes. That may be your earthly boss. But you know what? You don't work for that person. Your work is for Jesus Christ. So at the end of the day, when you plumb that toilet and nobody cares, nobody notices, Jesus Christ cares. It matters to him. And you're doing it for him. You're doing it for him. What does it look like for a person to approach their work life, giving it their heart, working for Jesus Christ? Well, let me show you what it looks like. It looks like just an ordinary guy, a guy named Dan Murphy. Let's watch his story.
My name is Dan Murphy. I own Foundation Auto Repair. I wanted to be able to provide a honest automotive repair facility that people can trust, because the reputation of the industry that I'm in is very bad when it comes to honesty and trustworthy. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't really good, honest automotive repair facilities out there, but you really have to find them. Well, throughout my career, 20 years, I've worked with several people, and it's been very awesome in the last 10 years to have been able to work with certain people that are very Christ-oriented. And recently, one of the owners of the shop that I worked with for 5.5 years was an example of an extremely honest, ethical automotive repair facility, and it was Christ-centered. The name Foundation Auto Repair has brought people in, and they have asked how I've or why I've named it Foundation Auto Repair, and it allowed me to share with them my beliefs and why the business statement is complete honest automotive repair is done with integrity. I view my spiritual life and my work life as one, really, because it was God that offered me the opportunity to take over this shop and own this shop, to be able to be a light for him. And you know, I start my days off praying, and then I'll go in and I will, you know, go to work, and I will treat people with integrity, with respect, you know, when they come in. I've been really complimented on the fact that I'll take the time to talk to them and to elaborate on what we're doing and explain it to them where they can understand it. And you know, that's just God bringing me into their lives to be able to use my knowledge to allow them to make an educated decision on the repairs that they need to make. My spiritual life and my work life have also offered me the opportunity to be able to be a mentor with my employees, with one in particular that had an alcohol problem, and it allowed me to use my experience as a recovering alcoholic to be able to mentor him or minister to him and show him how his addiction can affect his life and how it can affect his work. I discover God at work each and every day, and he just, it's awesome how he just opens my eyes and just opens up the opportunities and just opens the doors, because I never once imagined I'd own it physically, the land and the building, and just, you know, God has just been there and just opened the doors and taken care of it.
Isn't it great to think that you could take your car to a person who woke up in the morning and prayed that God would use that day to demonstrate himself, that came to fix your car, not to your specifications, but to a higher specifications, to Jesus Christ's standard, that really had an attitude that his serving you is an act of worship and obedience, and doing his best job is the most important thing, not just to make you happy, but to make Jesus Christ happy. Now, can you imagine what it would be like living in a community that was filled with people, Christ followers, who all approached their work that way? That's an awesome, awesome thought. And you know what? That's God's plan for us. That's his plan for your work. And it's not simply about how much money you're going to make at the end of the day. The paycheck factor is a lot bigger than that. In fact, he tells us in this passage that my paycheck is really eternal rewards. My paycheck is really bigger than what I can earn. It's my eternal rewards. Look again, verse 23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men. Note these words, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. He says that we should know this, since we know that what we do, whatever it may be, when we work at it with all of our heart, working for Christ, not simply for humans, that we will be rewarded for that. There's an eternal inheritance awaiting us. As Christians, we should know that what we do with this precious life that has been given to us by God, that we're going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ someday, and we're going to give an explanation. We're going to have our life reviewed. We're going to stand before God, and God's going to look at what we did. Not just what church we went to or how many hours we put into our ministry, but he's going to look at every aspect of our life, and he's going to look at our work life. And this passage tells us that God himself is going to give us eternal rewards and eternal inheritance for how we took this time, invested it with our best to demonstrate and reflect this workmanship that God built in us, and to do it to serve other people as we serve Jesus Christ. We're going to be rewarded in eternity for how we do our work right here and right now. Your work matters to God. Now, most of the time, we think about the wrong things. We think of things like, my work matters because of what I do, or my work is important because of who I work with, or my work is important because of where I work. And you know what? God is not so much interested in that. The question God is interested in is, how are you doing your work? How are you going about doing it? And I want to close with four principles that I believe come from this passage that are revolutionary in nature. These principles didn't originate with me. Andy Stanley in his Work Life series put these four principles forward. I just believe that they're so powerful to redirect our thinking about our work life. The first principle is this: your work has eternal implications, even if it has no apparent eternal value. Your work has eternal implications, even if it has no apparent eternal value. Some of you would say, I am making widgets all day long. How can God care about widgets? The technology that I developed 3 years ago is now outdated. How can God care about that technology? The landscaping job I did for that woman's yard
is now all overgrown. She didn't take care of it. How in the world could God care about that project? How could God care about those things? You know what? He cares about you. It's not so much what you're doing that matters. It's how you're doing it. And there are eternal implications for how you do your job. Your reward, your well done, that's part of what you're doing. And you know what? God is smart. He didn't design a stupid system. So think about it this way. If you're going to go and do an 8-hour job, you're going to invest 8 precious hours of this life on Monday morning. God's giving that value. And you can work at it in such a way that your attitude, your strength, what you bring to it, your wisdom, your effort, and your energy can actually be something that God is pleased with as he watches you from heaven. That God, your Father, can enjoy as he watches you work. You know, some of us are just burning our lives. And we go to work with a bad attitude. We do our worst. We get by with what we can. It's just like taking 8 hours of our life and just lighting a match to it and just watching it fizzle away. It's just gone. It's just lost. God cares about how you do it. It has eternal implications, even if the task itself seems dumb, seems unimportant, seems silly. Second principle is how you perform at work is as important as where you work. How you perform at work is as important as where you work. We have a tendency to grade work in our culture. So if you're a neurosurgeon, you work at the hospital, big deal. If you're a ditch digger, you know, you work on the road, not important. You know what? How you perform your job is as important as where you do it. And so a lazy CEO, in the sight of God, is not performing his work with excellence is less valuable, it's less laudable, it's less important than a very committed bricklayer that does an excellent job of building a wall. It doesn't matter so much where you work. We've got so many people that say, you know, I'm in a dead-end job. It's not a big deal. Nobody cares about this job. So why would that be important to God? Because you're important to God. How you do your job is important. Third principle. This was the one that gets me. How you perform at work is as important as how you behave at work. How you perform at work is as important as how you behave at work. Being nice is not a good substitute for doing a good job. So if you're a nice person, but you do a cruddy job with your work, you are performing poorly. There's no compensation for that. And please, please do not put up the ichthus fish in your cubicle and have a Jesus Save screensaver on your screen and then go in there and try to figure out ways to do the least amount of work you possibly can. Thinking to yourself, well, because I'm a Christian and I don't swear, you know, I don't yell at people in meetings, then that's enough. I mean, think about it. The word integrity means to integrate. It's to take what I say and what I believe and to integrate it with my behavior, with my actions. So if I give my employer a resume that says I can do certain things because I have certain training and certain skills and certain experience, and then after giving him that resume and getting hired into that role, I don't live up to or perform to what I presented as myself, that's a lack of integrity. That's dishonesty. In other words, my performance has something to do with my honesty. If I accept a job and I see the job responsibilities, and then I don't fill those job responsibilities, that's being dishonest. how I perform in my job is significant. It says something about who I am, what I believe, what's true. How I perform is as important as how I behave. Now, that doesn't mean just because you're a great performer, you can behave like an idiot. And some people think that too. We'll talk about that in a later message. Number four, putting your heart into your work allows God to bless your work. Putting your heart into your work allows God to bless your work. That's the formula for blessing. In this passage, it tells us, work at it with all your heart because that's where you're going to receive a reward from the Lord as an inheritance. So when we do what God asks us to do, we set ourselves up to work with God in partnership so that he can bless our work. God can bless our work. Now, as we move into these principles and begin to embrace them as a team, I just want to give you the genesis of this series. Where do we start with all this? Well, about a year ago, one of our staff members submitted to me a plan for work-life ministry and really challenged my thinking. And what I came to understand through the process of looking at what he presented and interacting with this whole process is that the church tends to spend the majority of the training teaching you how to do ministry. In other words, most of the training we offer is training about your personal life and your personal ministry, how to have a quiet time, how to share your faith, how to pray. We also train you in how to do specialized ministries, how to teach a children's class, how to lead a small group, how to work with youth. And you know what? Most of us in the volume of time don't spend so much time with those things. We spend time in our workplace. And I became very convicted that we offer very little training about ethics in the job place, how to perform with excellence, how to build significant relationships with people, how to reach people through our work. And that's where we spend the majority of our time, but the church does very little to equip you. And so we've decided to change that. In fact, we took one of our pastors, Paul Carlson, and moved him into work-life ministry, and he's been working for the last year to build an infrastructure of networks through our church and in our city to equip you, to encourage you, to support you in your work life. And the sermon series is just kind of laying out the principles that will culminate when we get to the end of the six weeks in helping you connect with other people and giving you training and tools to live out your work life. In order to get you started in this, I want you to have something to do tomorrow morning. And so if you'll reach in your bulletin, you're going to find one of these cards. If you didn't get a bulletin when you came in, we've got some ushers. They'd love to put one in your hand. Reach in the bulletin or raise your hand. They'll give you one of these cards. Everybody needs to get one. Okay? It's called the Work-Life Challenge. And each week, we're going to give you a work-life challenge, an assignment to complete during the week so that you can discover God at work. Okay? So this is your work-life challenge. You say, well, I'm a student. Hey, work-life challenge right here. You say, I'm a stay-at-home parent. Hey, this is your work-life challenge. Say, I'm retired. Oh. Hey, you guys work too. My dad told me since he retired, he has less free time than he's ever had before. Whatever you're doing, this is your work-life challenge. So now you got the envelope in your hand, little Mission Impossible feel in the room. You kind of got that kind of vibe going. Okay, tear it open. If you choose to accept it, here's your work-life challenge, okay? On the inside, you're going to find a card. And the card has two challenges. We've given you two so you can pick one. If you're a type A person, you'll probably try to do them both. If you're not a type A person, you may try to get out of both of them. But what we'd like you to do is to try to do one of these this week. And it's, the first one is, what is it you like least about your work? Pray and ask God to give you a new perspective about it. Write down what you can do differently and then do it. So pick one thing that you hate about your job. Pray and ask God to give you some insight. Write it down, whatever insight he gives you, and then this week, try to do it. Just try to do it. See what happens. Okay? It's all about discovering God. See what happens. May fail miserably, may go really well, may be really neutral, but try it. The other one, and these are either or, Pray for your company, organization, or employer to succeed and prosper, even if you aren't happy with your work life right now. So the second one is actually a little easier, unless you really, really hate the boss. And that is to pray for the success of your company, organization, or the people you work with, and see what God does. Now, our goal is that each week I'm going to give you a new work-life challenge. So don't get to Friday and say, hey, I forgot about it. I didn't do this. I'll just do it next week, because next week we're going to give you a new one. And our goal is to get everybody doing the work-life challenge, and then we want to talk about it. And so we've established a blog spot on our website where you can actually go on there and you can record what happened. You can tell us what happened, and other people can read it. We'll have a chance to kind of dialogue and get a conversation going. And we're going to discover God at work, because we're going to all be talking about it. We're going to be sharing about it. We're going to see what God's doing out there. We're going to learn from one another. In order to see that, I want you to see on our website. If you go to our website, let me work backwards here a little ways, see where we were. If you go to our website, there's a whole section on work-life ministry. And you go in there, it'll be on the front page, you click on work-life ministry, and we've got all kinds of tools to help you in your workplace. For example, if you go to the resources here and you click on the resources, we've got our work-life support center that's got all kinds of articles and ideas and help. You know, how do you negotiate a raise as a Christian? Now, what do you do when you're unemployed? What are some biblical principles about that? How do you deal with ethics or ethics violations in the workplace? All of these things are tools that are written from a Christian perspective to help you think through the things that you face on a day-to-day basis. And so there's just tons and tons of information there to help you out. On our work life, there's a place to get connected with people. There's a work life devotional that you can use, the work life devotional. And down at the bottom, there's a place here where you can click to log on to the blog. And there's the blog. It's got Blogspot. It's got our week one challenge. The questions are there, so you can look at them again. And then no comments so far, which means first service. Nobody's gone out and done one of these yet. You can be the first. And there's, you just click on the comments section. There's a place there for you to type in your experience, leave your comments, and we'll have them up in a short period of time. And I just want us to start a dialogue where, as a group, we start talking about what we're seeing out there. Because here's what we're talking about. At the end of the day, if God is a worker, and God's created us to work, and God is out there in our world working, it's our responsibility to walk in to our workplace, whatever that might be, and start asking the question, God, where are you? I want to discover you in my work. Because this is going to be an exciting experience to see how God is pleased with that. And we're challenging each one of you. Begin to see your work life as a place to meet God and to see Him do incredible things. In order to dedicate our week, I want us to close with a song of dedication. So I'm going to ask our worship team to make their way back up here. You guys come on back in. As they make their way back up here, just think about what your life will look like this week as you look for God. Let's stand together and we'll sing a song of dedication.